The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Love this opening song. Hey, everybody, welcome. Ronald Nesty here in rock and roll heaven outside of Chicago in St. Charles at the Arcata Theater. We are hanging and banging tonight with my brothers Vinny Appice and Carmine Appice with our special guests John Payne and Gilby Clark. Another great episode, our 44th week here on Artists on Lockdown. And let's get the party started and bring to the microphone my brother, Mr. Vinny Appice. Let's see what he's got to pick on me, to say about things. This week, hi, Vin. Wake up. I timed myself. It was like 14 seconds. Now, don't even.
Where are you? Look at that monitor behind you, man. That thing.
That's pretty serious stuff. I am playing. I'm at the point now. You know how when you guys come into my place and I got to rent backline for you?
Yeah.
I'm renting backline for this show now. So.
No, that's nice. That's a big monitor. You got the whole
It's really cool.
Good.
It's really cool. Yep.
And look at that shirt. Thanks. Why? They always come in square too, right?
No, they don't. It's our printing presses. We make thousands of them, and it just square.
Square. Anyway,
let's bring our big brother to the microphone. We got a full show tonight, like we do all the time. Carmine Appice, Vanilla Fudge, and so many other things. What's up, Carmine?
Hey, dude. Oh, this thing's in the way. Look at this. My microphone.
Yeah, come on. You can't cover the...
There you go. Okay. How you doing, dude? How you doing?
So good to see you. Love the albums in the cover.
Hey, Vinny.
What's going on? Figure it out. Did you get home okay?
Hey. Yeah, I did. Everything's good. We just released our Cactus Tightrope record. It's doing well. We have to feature it on one of these shows.
Absolutely. Really, and we got to get a date down. I mean, let's go.
Let's pick a date.
I'm telling you, before I do anything else, I want you guys to pick a date.
We're going to be doing Yardbirds, Cactus, and Pat Travis together.
Wow. I can't wait.
That's a show.
I can't wait.
We're going to have to change the name of this show because gigs are coming up now.
Yeah, you know, well, I was going to talk to you guys about that offline, but, you know, we're going to have some stuff going on Thursday nights.
So it'll be gigging and banging.
Gigging and banging. Where are they? Where are they in the country or in the world? Something.
Yeah, right.
You know, that would be good. We should do that. We could do backstage, and we can head the live. This would be awesome. We'll talk about this. But, hey, guys.
We got to do a hanging and banging live at your place.
You know what?
Yeah, you should do
a
show.
We got so much to talk about.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Absolutely. I've got hotel suites now in my place, like the Sinatra suite, the Zeppelin suite, the Vinny suite, the Carmine suite. Well, the Vinny suite is the where the housekeeping keeps the cart, but we can move it over.
Somebody said, AC said, nice shirt, Ron.
Yeah.
Well, at least she got...
That's nice. You know, so what? It's square, you know.
Hey. What do you have on your hat tonight?
This is 13, my birthday.
I got 60s tie-dye.
Because that never goes out of style. I'm just saying.
No, I never wear printed shirts. I have one printed shirt, an Affliction shirt. That's it.
Well, that's, you know, we got to get you some Arcata shirts, some swag.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, you believe this is 44 square.
44 shows without an Arcata shirt. That's all I see it as.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. We got to send these guys to Arcata swag.
pretty amazing, 44 shows, though.
It really is, man. I mean, think about it. 44 is getting really close to 52. A full year. You believe that?
A full year of this stuff.
8 years difference, yeah.
I love when you get to be profound, but you know, it makes everybody just stop and think.
You can't fool me. Can't fool me.
All his life. He's been like that all his life.
Oh, my gosh. No
wonder. He used to stop my mother in his tracks.
Hey, I got a royalty check here from Carmine's company, Power Rock Enterprises.
I could just
did you really?
Check it out.
How much? How much?
What do you got there?
I can't see it.
How much is it?
$10.33.
$10.33. That's bigger. At least it's got dollars. The last few checks only had cents on it.
Yeah.
Well, you know who sent it out? You know who sent that out?
It was hand delivered by my brother Frank. Lives around
your older brother.
I don't even know what it. Who buys? I don't know what that for. What video?
I don't know what it's for. Didn't he give you a statement?
I think it's attached. Back.
Yeah, the statement was, "This is BS." That was the statement.
He said here's the statement.
Drum Wars.
Here's the statement. I quit from delivering these stupid little checks all my life, Frank. Oh, it was
guys, we got a big
gross of $12. What did you take taxes out?
A big, huge show tonight. I'd love to chat with you guys. I'd love to chat about Vinny's challenged income situation right now.
We can go to In-N-Out Burger and eat.
You're talking Black Sabbath.
Right.
You're talking Dio. You're talking Last in Line. You're talking a check of $10.53. How's the career going?
It's good. It's good.
We're going to play some karaoke bars soon. But anyway, let's get to our guest tonight because we got love these guys. I'm telling you.
Yeah, good guys.
Oh, just tremendous. And I got to say, we've had some great guests every week. I mean, like good people, you know?
We do.
And Ted Nugent.
Yeah. I hope he's not watching.
No, he knows we love him because he's been really cool with us. Not a whole lot of politics. No, just it's all about rock and roll. That's what I love when he plays my place. I say, Ted, just kind of minimize it a little bit. He's like, he gives me 2 hours of solid rock and roll. Really, really good. Yeah. All right, let's bring to the microphone our first guest. Really excited about him. All kinds of things. You know him from Guns N' Roses, but so many other things. We got a lot to talk about. Let's bring our buddy, Gilby. Gilby Clark, where you at, brother?
Hey.
There he is, dude.
Yeah.
What's happening, guys? How are you?
Gilby.
Happy to be here.
Well, welcome. Yeah. You're hanging and banging with two legends on your left there, or your right, maybe.
Yeah, right on, man. I mean, it's going to get loud in here, that's for sure.
How did you beat these? You know Carmine, don't you?
Yeah, I know Carmine. I don't know Vinny, but I've seen Vinny play many times. Going back to the Derringer days.
Oh, man. Yeah, shit. I was there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was a huge Derringer fan.
Oh, really?
Huge.
Derringer's going to be on this show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we're excited.
With Weird Al.
When I first moved to California from Cleveland, and bands like Van Halen and Quiet Riot and all those bands were just starting out, and I never saw Van Halen live in the club days, but I saw Randy Rhoads and all them. And my friends were talking about this guy, Eddie Van Halen, how great he was, that you've never seen anything like it. My quote was, he'll never be Rick Derringer.
Oh, wow. That's a great. Let's save that one, that story for next week.
He was my hero, man.
That's a good one.
Actually, I saw Van Halen at the Whiskey when I moved out here.
Wow.
And that was right after Derringer, and they said, you should check this band out, Van Halen. Van Halen, okay. So I went to the Whiskey, and it was packed, of course, and man, that was great. Eddie was whole band.
Local bands back then were insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
Well, did you get you said one of your icons, obviously. Were you influenced like methodically how you played by him?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We all have our influences, you know, and stuff. He was everything I wanted to be. You know, it's like he could sing, he could play guitar, he could write songs, he played with other people. Yeah. There's just something about him that I really related to. And I loved his music, you know. It's like every record, you know, was, to me, perfect. I said I knew every word to every song. I mean, back then I wasn't really listening to records to learn to play guitar. I was just, like, listening to them for, you know, I just liked their music.
Sure.
Well, wow. somebody's chiked in there watching from Lyon, France.
All right.
Wow.
Wow.
All right.
Well, everybody, you know, we've got the chat going, so anybody have any questions for our guests towards the end of the show, I'll check out some questions, and if they're cool questions, we'll ask our guests, and you'll win a prize. I don't know what it's going to be. Dinner with Gilby Clark at his home.
Hey, hey, I'll send them anytime. This. I'll send them this. I'll send them this. I'll endorse
you know what?
It.
All kidding aside, a freaking autographed thing like that from you, I want that.
And
I want that.
I got the one for 29 cents down there, too. It's somewhere. I saw it the other day.
You guys are hysterical. Hey, let's bring our next guest also going to join us with our little our jam here tonight. One of the greatest voices in rock and roll. Love this guy. Again, so many other things he's been a part of. Of course, you know him from Asia. Let's bring John Payne.
John.
Hey.
There he is. Hey.
There he is. Hey, Johnny.
Hi, John.
How are you?
So, good, man. How you doing, bro?
Not bad at all.
Yeah, can we just let you talk for the rest of the show, just with your accent, please?
I'll talk a load of rubbish. Yeah, I'm really from Queens, New York.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Queens in
like
your dreams.
Yeah. Now that's another story.
Right.
Like David Coverdale, I had elocution lessons.
Really?
To speak properly.
Hey, Dick, and now we got everybody saying where they're from. We got Sweden, Philadelphia,
wow.
Tennessee.
Yeah.
Everybody keeps saying where you're from.
Montreal.
Chime in so we know who we're talking to.
We are
Las Vegas.
We Germany. Are Germany.
Gilby Clark, Germany.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, guys, welcome to Hanging and Banging. So good to see you. John, what have you been doing to keep your chops going? I mean, you got to be – we're going to start opening the venue soon, so –
Yeah, and we're playing at your place at some stage when it gets
August 28th.
Rescheduled.
August 28th.
Yeah, August 28th. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't been there for a while.
Yes.
And looking forward to having a nice meal beforehand.
Yeah, the meatballs, the meatballs.
Yeah, it's lovely. But I set up a studio here in Las Vegas. Well, I bought a house and it stopped becoming a house. It's basically a studio with a couple of bedrooms. I've got a 80-channel mixing console. It's all analog and stuff. And
wow.
25-foot ceilings. And it's really helped out during this time of no concerts. I mean, I came back from a cruise, which many of us have done, the rock and roll cruises out of Fort Lauderdale on March 15th, and America was shut down. And basically until last weekend, that was the first time I did a gig. Mm. And it's been over a year without a show.
Where'd you do a gig?
I did a corporate gig in Dallas for a guy's birthday, a guy called Dave Stickland, who's actually an English guy. And it was his wife Andrea's birthday. And they bought the hotel for three nights.
Wow.
With a Virgin Hotel there. Yeah. And Coolio was on, Young MC, Tone Loc. And
Jean Payne.
We were... And me with the Asia band, and we had Billy Gibbons do 12 songs with us.
Nice.
Which was phenomenal. And Billy's tone, he had a Magnavox amp, and his tone was just superb. And he sang great, and he was really cool. He goes, okay, you sing every other line in Sharp Dressed Man. So I got to sing Sharp Dressed Man with Billy, and he's a gentleman. The real gentleman, and hopefully I'll work with him again.
Yeah, we did a gig with Drum Wars, me and Vinny, last year, just before the everything shut down in Washington, D.C., and Billy was the special guest. And I think I played. You didn't get to play with him, right, Vin?
I played with him at some point. But we had to play really low.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plays very quiet. Yeah. He has no monitors on stage or anything. It's unbelievable.
So Gilby, listen to this. We're setting up just before the show. Billy actually rehearsed one day at my house here in Vegas. We all rehearsed in the house. And we got him a couple of monitors, and he just plugged into one of the amps here and was so low maintenance. We come to do the gig, and we're all on in-ears. We take our in-ear system with us. And he goes to me, he goes, hey, get the sound guy over. And he goes, sound guy, he goes, what are these? He said, they're wedges for you. You got two wedges. He goes, I don't want these. He goes, why? He goes, I spent a lot of money on these shoes. People have got to see my shoes.
Probably the velvet ones, yep.
Yeah, the velvet ones.
That's a good one.
And the monitors are stripped away, and he just hears his voice from out front.
From out front. Isn't that insane?
Wow.
It is insane, but, you know, it's the same thing with a lot of the early English vocalists and how I learned as well. Mm-hmm. It's like Steve Marriott and...
Hey, Vanilla Fudge had no monitors for years.
Yeah.
No
well,
monitors.
You know, look at Rod Stewart. You divert these croaky voices because you had to sing above everything else. And the PA was out in front of you.
Yeah.
I mean, I never had wedges at all.
Yeah.
You know,
the first time I had wedges was 1973 with BBA.
Wow.
That's the first time.
Right.
Before that, Vanilla Fudge, Cactus, no wedges.
I mean, that's impossible. Think about it.
Yeah.
Well, like you said, if you're used to it and you do it every night, you really don't know the difference.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess,
it's
yeah.
great. I've done lots of gigs with Billy, and it just blows my mind because you're right. He plays quiet volume, and he doesn't want any weight. He wants to just hear the surroundings. You know.
Yeah, and he was saying that ZZ Top plays so quietly on stage. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. That's the trick.
You know,
yeah.
He's got tone for miles and.
Yeah.
Seven gauge strings.
Yeah, exactly.
And a great guy too.
Yeah.
Soft-spoken.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Loves everybody. Yeah. Great, generous with the fans. Just has a great time. I don't know how he gets those hats that are like knitted for him or whatever the heck he's wearing. But
yeah.
A great guy. I'm going to throw it a different direction here. So you guys, I put on Italian festivals in Chicago here, and one year. I had Nancy Sinatra at my Italian festival.
Right.
So, you know, now, so what do I get, right? I've got all these blue hairs, they think she's going to come out and do Fly Me to the Moon and New York, New York, and they're all sitting there, and she comes out, and her band all looking like Gilby. Wow. Boots was like a rock thing. People almost gave people heart attacks. But Gilby, you played with Nancy.
Yeah, many years, like about 5 years.
Really?
Kidding.
Wow.
Made a couple records with her. And when I first started with her, she had Hal Blaine on drums.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Which is really, really great. And you know Don Randy that owns the Baked Potato here in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
So Don was her musical director, and I used to go out there on Tuesday nights.
Wow.
Carmine, you've been there a few times.
Oh, yeah.
And Don came up to me one time and said, you know, Nancy's going to do a record and tour. Would you be interested? And I go, you do hear how loud I play.
I know.
and they goes, you know, Nancy always likes to have two guitar players. She likes a rock and roll guy, and she wants someone who plays the jazz. So I got in there with her, and the first thing it's a reading gig. They just hand you the sheet music.
Oh.
And, I mean, I can read like most musicians, you know, chord charts, things like that, you know. And I started looking at it. The hardest problem I had is they're all from the 60s and they're written in pencil.
Oh.
I don't know about you, but my eyes aren't so bad, but I mean, pencil. I was like, and then she hand you sheet music. I go, you know, I think I can figure this one out with the sheet music, you know, but because the songs weren't that hard, except for some of the jazz stuff. But but I ended up, like I said, did many years with Hal, and then I actually brought in Clem Burke. Played drums with her for quite a few years.
Nice. What a great Clem's a great drummer. He used to go to the Fox and Hounds on Ventura Boulevard, and I bumped into Clem many times in there.
Yeah,
he's
good
great.
Thing you didn't get Vinny.
Yeah,
yeah,
roar off the stage. Yeah.
Boom!
Yeah, if she did any ballads, forget about it. You know,
that's
one
the
of
thing.
His fortes is no ballads.
I used to turn my Marshall cabinet the other way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, away from the front, you know, because, you know, it was a little bit loud. But she loved it. She's sweetheart. You know, I was raised, my family's Italian. So the only problem about those tours were I gained 20 to 30 pounds every time because they always go to the best Italian restaurant in town at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Just like her dad.
And it's
they kept it open for her.
They kept it open
like
for her. You know? And you go and you eat, and it's like, you know, and then you go to bed, and you know what happens
later. Yeah.
I did that with Rod Stewart, too. We used to finish the gig and then go to the best restaurant in town, you know, and then go to bed.
You go to bed.
I stopped doing it. I said, I can't do this. I'm just gaining weight.
Well, you stopped going to bed.
Yeah. I would just go to bed.
Just stay at the Italian restaurant.
So you mentioned Gilby Clark's name. I got to be honest. Nancy Sinatra's probably not the first name that comes to mind when I mention yours. Just like when I mentioned John Payne, like Johnny Cash's stepdaughter doesn't come to my mind.
I know. That's weird.
How does that happen?
I know. I worked with her for 3 years, and Carlene Carter is just such a cool singer. And I did a project with her in Canada, in Scandinavia, and it did really well. And we occasionally keep in touch. But yeah, it's kind of bizarre.
What kind of music was that?
It was a rock with a bit of country and western in it. And there were two Norwegian stars and me and Carlene, and it was a cool record. It was actually produced by the same guy that did the band TNT out of Trondheim up in the north in Norway.
What did the CCP, is it the Russian CCP?
So it was Carlene, Casino, Claudia.
Okay, I know that in Russia used to be called CCCP. I thought it had something to do with that.
Well, I kind of think it was just a play on it.
Oh,
really.
Okay. It was Swedish, wasn't it? Some kind of a Swedish?
Norwegian.
Right.
So what I want to know is, who in your family was Italian, Gilby?
Yeah.
My mother.
Got your mother. What was the last
name? My mother, Santarelli.
Hey! Yo!
just like Eddie Trunk, his mother is Italian, too. We're finding all these cool things out on this show.
I know. It really is. Yeah? It really is. But, Gilby, would you do me a favor from now on? Could it be G-I-L-B-I, please?
Oh, there you go. I know Clark isn't very Italian.
Well, it does end in a vowel, though. I appreciate you throwing that in there.
Clark.
Well, I'm sure you guys can all relate. You know, it's like you go through your life, people are like, yeah, I'm Italian. They go, Clark? Yeah. It's not Italian. I go, well, you know, it's my mother, which was the good food side.
So, Gilby, you could look Italian.
He looks Italian.
He's got the mustache.
The mustache.
Right. Just like our moms.
Well, my brother Frank used to have that mustache, but he had short hair. So he used to tell me he looked like a porn star. Yeah, he had the short hair and the mustache.
The big porn handle.
Oh, it's Ron Jeremy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Gilby, I gotta go to the GNR years because, you know, I'm hearing all these stories. You know, obviously we know about the lovely and talented Axl Rose, how you know, his freaking world a little nuts. How did you, it seemed like you were like literally like a ping pong ball being like, or like a cat with a mouse. That whole experience is like freaking weird. I mean, in a nutshell, what was that about?
Well, I mean, the good thing for myself was by the time I got in the band, I was I actually just turned 30. So, you know, from being around Hollywood all those years, you know, you have some pretty crazy experiences. So by the time I got into the band, been around a little bit, and I knew the guys, you know, like as friends. And actually, I knew Izzy the best, which was odd because I ended up replacing him. But what I kind of caught on with the band was it just kind of seemed like it was a disaster. Mm-hmm. Like every day, but for some reason, it always worked out. It's like it used to blow my mind from being in bands and making records. Like whenever something bad happened, it was so dramatic and it could take your band down. But with that band, it's like the worst things happened, it's like the better it was. It's almost like a promo.
It was late, but it worked out.
Exactly. Yeah, we were a little bit late every night. But I mean, you know, Slash kind of told me early on, he goes, one of the great things about being in a band, it was like the license to be a fuck up. You know, it's like, you really could practically get away with murder.
But when you did, the Stone song with Slash, like you do, was that your idea? Was that his idea?
Oh, it was. Yeah. So here's what's interesting. When I got the gig, I played with them a couple times. Like I basically, from the day that I walked into the rehearsal studio with them, within 2 weeks, I was on stage with them. But so I only played with them a couple times, you know, and I was talking with them for about a week. And then Slash called me and says, you got the gig. The first show's next week. Learn the whole catalog.
Oops.
And that time it was a 50 song catalog. Oh. And I said, well, why don't you just give me the set list? And they said, there is no set list. We make it up as it goes along. So I literally had a week to learn 50 songs, and this is before YouTube. So I just sat there, with a cassette player, realistically, and learned everything. And then when I got to the very first show, we're at soundcheck, and Slash came up to me and he goes, "What are you going to do for your solo?" Mm-hmm. And I went, "Solo? What the fuck am I? You're the lead guitar. What am I going to do? I'm going to sit there and play guitar." And then Slash comes up, who everybody knows. You know, like, So I came up with an idea. I go, "Well, maybe I'll play a little bit of Wild Horses. And then do you want to come doodle with me?" And it happened the same day, the first day. And it just kind of organically grew into something that was kind of fun. Like every night we changed it up a little
bit. I'll tell you what, it became a highlight of the show.
Oh, thank God. I don't know. I mean, no, there's some great stuff going on, but it was fun. It was fun because that one thing about that band is it never planned anything. I mean, even the day I got in, I was never told what to play, what to wear, what to do. It's like all that was left
Steven
open.
Was Steven the drummer when you came in, or was it Matt?
Matt came in first. Matt was in about a year before I did.
Okay. So you never played with Steven Adler?
Not with them. I've played with Steven since, not during those years. No. Yeah.
So John, just like as Gilby joining like a band that was going, heroes of his at the time, friends of his, John Wetton, obviously replaced him. And how was that joining, a band such as an international superstar band? A little nervous?
It was difficult. I mean, you're talking about Klodner named them the first supergroup. Wow. You got ELP, UK, Buggles, Yes, all forming this band. And there's me sort of coming from nowhere. So it was quite unnerving. And our first gig was at NHK Hall in Japan, in Tokyo, where we had three nights.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to expect. And luckily, it went well. But I must admit, I don't really get nervous at shows, but those first few shows, I was terrified. I was terrified more of what people would say about me. And still, you even ask Brian Johnson or you ask anybody that's joined a band, even if it's the Rolling Stones, you're the new boy, even if you've been in the band for 40 years. Mm-hmm. It never changes.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
But were they welcoming? I mean, I've had those guys. I had Asia at my place a couple times, and I mean, they're all nice guys. Three out of four of them were for sure.
So they're really quirky. Yeah. They're really, really, really quirky. And as a band, it's not like they all go and hang out together. Same with Yes. It's like, they all love each other and they all absolutely hate each other.
Exactly.
And, you've got Steve Howe, who's very different from, say, John Whitten or Carl Palmer. They're really like four separate people. And that first Asia record, everyone expected it to be this prog extravaganza. Yeah. And it wasn't. It was a rock pop record.
Yeah.
And, there was always a lot of infighting and changing members and stuff, and I got on very well with Jeff, and we did all the songwriting when I joined, but there were some very bizarre moments.
Well, Jeff, I mean, Jeff was definitely the smiliest of them, because I don't think I met four guys that just never smiled at all. Stayed in their dressing room until 1 minute to freaking showtime. And that's why I was wondering if they were, welcoming to you at first and warm, or was it just business, this business?
I mean, I became friends with all of them, but it was all of them separately. It was like on a one-to-one. As a band, it wasn't like this big, like how my band is now and bands have been before. It wasn't like a big family. Mm. And it was all worked on a one-to-one. And then people, had their times. Steve would either be really happy or really pissed off. And then there'd be, infighting. When you start a band...
Get that, will you?
If that's my mom, tell her I'm busy. They are all... It's not like a band that grew up together and stayed together and found this family. It's a band that already everybody was really successful. Mm-hmm. Everybody was probably a millionaire at the time and they got together and were really put together by David Geffen and John Colodney. And, you know, John Wetton wasn't even going to be the lead vocalist.
Really?
They tried the first guy from Journey for a while.
Greg Raleigh?
And no, the guy... The guy... Can't think of his name.
Yes.
Come on.
But what guy is that? I thought it was Greg Raleigh before Steve Perry.
No, he did one freaking album or something.
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Okay.
But there was a vocalist before Steve Perry. And of course Greg is
Greg,
wrong.
But there was...
I've been lucky to work with Greg. Greg's a really, really cool guy. Yeah.
Phenomenal.
And look, what a lot of people don't know is I started off as a guitarist. And you were talking about Van Halen, and I was obviously like all this great fan of Eddie's playing. And I was in a three-piece Hendrix-type band in my village in outside London, and I went to see my favorite guitarist at the time was Schenker. And Michael Schenker Group was supported by Van Halen at the Rainbow Theatre in London.
Was it Robert Fleischman?
It is Fleischman. It was Fleischman.
Robert Fleischman, correct. He was the first Journey vocalist.
He was.
So
I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
I went and saw Michael Schenker Group supported by Van Halen, and I was this cocky kid who thought he was the bee's knees playing guitar, and I saw Eddie Van Halen come on first and went, "Oh shit!"
Right. Right.
And then Schenker go, "Okay, I think I'm going to concentrate more on singing than guitar playing."
Wow.
But
where some people influence you, he influenced you not to play.
Yes. But now I'm back playing and I love it. I play a lot with fingers. I play strangely. I only play downstrokes. But I got to do, you know, I had this thing after my Vegas show called the Rock Pack, which is like the Rat Pack. But, you know, Lou Gramm's done it. Loads of singers. But I got to get to do some Santana stuff, and I bought a 60s SG and did all the early Santana stuff and played guitar. But so that's how I started.
It's incredible, man.
Well, you mentioned Jeff and the Bungles. We played Ron's place with the Platinum Rock All Stars.
Oh, yeah.
They had Jeff, Rudy Sarzo, Gene Cornish, Bumblefoot, and who's the other guy?
Gene.
Robert Fleischman.
No. Phil Narro. We played that song. We played that song, Video Kills the Radio Star. And it was really funny. You know,
the first song ever on MTV.
Yeah.
When they launched the satellite, that was the first one.
They played Video Kill the Radio Star.
I like you're playing overhand there.
Yeah.
Vinny would never do that.
No.
Did you?
No.
Did you use brushes?
No, I used the butt end of my stick like I always use.
Why is this?
Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
No, people go, "Do you use brushes?" I always reply, "Why is my hair messed up?" No brushes.
I can't picture you. You'd play a ballad before you use a brush.
Yeah. Somebody said you play with brushes. I only use one.
Yeah. Vinny, I thought you used brushes on Heaven and Hell, but maybe I'm not.
Oh, no.
I'd love to hear
it,
that.
It would be called Heaven and something else.
Hair.
Yeah. Heaven and brushes. Heaven and brushes.
Heaven and Hell!
Now, Gilly, we talk a little bit about the GNR stuff. I mean, hours we could spend on the weirdness of that whole deal, man. But
wait, before you get going,
yeah,
it's time for the commercial.
All right, we can do that now. We'll do the commercial because I'll tell you what, we started doing these commercials next week, just like this week, an amazing show. Let's let everybody see what we got in store for them next week.
Hi, this is Vinny Appice.
And Carmine Appice. It's not Appice, it's Appice. And we're here to tell you about our Hanging and Banging show.
Yeah, and we got some special guests on April 15th.
Hey guys, we'll be right back after a few messages from
7 p.m. Eastern Time.
At 4 p.m.
Welcome back to our Hanging and Banging podcast. I'm Ronald Esty.
And his guests are Dweezil Zappa. It's like a Sons of Rock star. We got Dweezil Zappa, the son of Frank Zappa, who's a friend of mine. And Dweezil played on my guitars, so I know Dweezil for a long time. And we also have
The son of the legendary Ginger Baker, Kofi Baker, good friend also, and he's going to be there too.
Yeah, remember we did show. That gig together with him, and Drummer Wars gig with Kofi, me and Vinny, it was awesome. Nope. So be there April 15th, 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Western, or Eastern with Pacific, whatever you want to call it, and artists on lockdown on Facebook.
My senses indicate an intruder is present.
Oh, and it must be those guys.
Those guys.
We're not intruders. No. We'll see you there.
You guys.
I only have one shirt.
Hey, matter of fact, that gig was at your place with Kofi.
Oh, I know that. I know. Yeah, Kofi. Yeah. Kofi used to live in Chicago. He called me every week. You got any openings? I'm like, Kofi, I can't. You know, legendary only goes so far every week here, man. We got to, you know. But, no, it's going to be a great show. I'll tell you another. I mean, Dweezil, what a gentleman and what a genius, really. That apple didn't fall short from the tree, as they say.
That's right.
So anyway, let me get back to Gilby. The GNR, another weirdness thing. Kind of weird. I don't know. So I'm not going to focus on this on the whole show. But I'm watching the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. And Steven and you and how did that whole thing go down? Did you know you're going to be on that at the time?
Well, to be honest, I don't really follow that stuff, you know. So I didn't even know that GNR had been nominated, let alone accepted or all that. I really wasn't paying attention, you know. And then I got a call from Matt, and Matt told me, you know, what was happening, and I go, whoa, that's kind of weird, because actually I didn't get inducted as part of the band. Matt and Dizzy did, along with the original five guys. Man. Yeah, and I thought it was a little odd, but by the time I found out, it was past, you know, what was, you know, going down, and so about 2 days before, first of all, I didn't think anybody was going to play or anything. 2 days before the show, Duff called me and says, hey, we're going to play. I go, oh, well, have a good time.
Yeah, right.
And he goes, I go, well, who's going to play? I go, I thought Axel's not going and Izzy's not going. He goes, well, they're not, but we want to do something. He goes, will you come out? So my wife and I flew out and we did the show. We literally rehearsed for it at 3 o'clock in the morning the night before. And that may sound weird, but Duff had a show in Cleveland the night before. He was doing something with his own band. And so we literally rehearsed after his show at 3 o'clock in the morning. So we actually, like, I played with Steven Slash and Duff, and then Miles Kennedy sang. But what was weird for me was, like I said, being not inducted, I didn't think it was so strange, because the Red Hot Chili Peppers were getting inducted at the same time. Mm-hmm. And like they did the same thing. They just kind of like picked and choose. Like Dave Navarro, who had been on 2 multi-million selling records, wasn't inducted with the Chili Peppers. But a guitar player that played on their first album was. So, you know, when I started hearing about all this stuff, I said, well, you know, it is. I go, are we getting paid for it? No. You know, who cares?
Hey, same thing with Black Sabbath, the different versions. Yeah. Ronnie didn't get inducted. I didn't get inducted, just the original band. And meanwhile, it was another whole half a career that
had successful records.
I brought it
very
back.
Very big successful records.
And Ronnie joined.
Yeah. Yeah.
And none of my bands got inducted. Vanilla Fudge.
It's coming.
Give me a break.
It's coming.
Yeah.
We got bullshit. We've got.
We can go on for hours about it. I mean, like, it just, awful. You know, we all, whether you care or don't care, I don't really know if it affects anything. It's like,
no,
I always say it's one more line in your bio that no one's paying
but
attention
to. But then I got a spam email from them saying, why don't you visit our merchandise shop and pick out a nice gift? You know, like they want me to buy something from their merch.
Yeah.
I'll buy one shirt and you induct me.
Deal.
That's it.
Yeah. I just thought that spoke volumes, the kind of guy you are, stand-up guy who did that. You know, a lot of guys wouldn't have done it, and I think it was cool that you did that. So,
well, thank you. I mean, to be honest, the only reason why I did it was because Duff asked me. Yeah. And Duff's my friend, yeah. You know, Slash is my friend. And and I did it plainly for that. I honestly didn't even think about all that other stuff. You know, we had no roadies. No text,
oh,
nothing.
No.
We literally walked. No, I'm not kidding. Because wow. It wasn't planned. We decided to do it, like I said, like a day or so before. I literally like walked on and plugged into an amp I'd never seen before.
Oh, wow. Shit. Wow.
You know, we talked a little bit, John, you touched a little bit on the Rock Pack earlier. Obviously, a play on the words on the Rat Pack, only a rock and roll style Rat
That's
Pack,
cool.
Right?
Good name.
And yeah, very, very cool. And and I was looking at some of the people that performed with this. It's a great concept. And who was like your best combination, do you think? Who was someone that was like, man, we got to take this one on the road?
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a surprising thing. And I put it together quite shortly after leaving my Vegas show, mm-hmm. Raiding the Rock Vault, in 2014. So I had this concept of having an English pub on stage and... my version of Asia would come out, do three Asia songs, and then a big screen would come up with a pub in Covent Garden in London, and then on one side of the stage there was this bar with a load of drinks in with someone behind the bar, and I'd go and serve a drink. I said, I've known the guy 20 years. It's Lou Grant from Foreigner, and Lou would come out. I'd talk to him briefly for a couple of minutes about his career, and then we'd go and do three or four Foreigner songs.
Great concept.
Basically, everybody that did it, it was so cool. The first half would be the three Asia songs, and then Lou would come on and do one, and then Mickey Thomas would come on and do one, and Fee Wable from the Tubes would come and do one. They did three each, and then the second half, it was just one, 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 and then we'd all sing together at the end. But... as performers, Tony Lewis from The Outfield, who sadly,
God rest his soul.
One of my best friends, God rest his soul, he sang in the same keys. You know, he's got that Colin Hay Sting type voice.
Yeah.
They're really high, singing in the same keys. His voice was just phenomenal. Mickey Thomas, still hitting the high E in Jane. You know, Robin Zander. Wow. And as a performer, Fee Wable from the Tubes, what a great front man, you know, from the early songs like White Punks on Dope, mm-hmm. to She's a Beauty, you know,
great song.
Which is very kind of hi-fi, and actually kind of difficult to play a lot of those songs. So and I don't really think I had a favorite.
But the whole thing is just a great concept. I mean, you know, to bring like Lou, or you would have brought like a Tony or like two or three of those guys and do a show like that. Bring yeah. them on, bring them on, bring them on. Like it's a greatest hits kind of a thing hosted. I mean, as a promoter and a venue owner, I would have been first in line. Like I want that show.
Yeah. At one stage, we had like six people involved in it, from Steve Walsh in Kansas, you know, doing Dust in the Wind. We played a few stadiums down in Florida with it, and it was very, very cool. And I continue to do a similar thing still.
Hey, Ron. Ron.
Yeah, man.
You're not only a venue owner and a promoter.
This is going to be a shot, guys.
You're a talk show host now, too. You got to add that in the resume.
Listen, for me to be the second banana to the Apicea Peace Brothers, are you kidding me? How cool am I? I get to know you guys.
I have a question for John. John, I saw the Rock Vault many times with Paul Shortino.
Right, me too.
Yeah. Was that your idea?
So I came up with a concept, and I wrote a 42-page treatment, which was basically the story of my life growing up hearing music from the 60s, Radio Caroline out in the in the sea,
sure.
Going from, and on one side of the stage I had an AM radio station, and then I brought it to my friend David Kirschenbaum, who was an entrepreneur, record producer, produced Tracy Chapman, Duran Duran, and he was an A&M executive, and he kind of helped me put it all together, And you know, it was the.
But there was some other guy. There was some other guy involved in it.
There was a guy. There was a guy called Harry Cow, who was the producer who got an investor involved.
Right.
And you know, it was great. I had Elvis's old dressing room, and that.
I've been there many times with Paul, and I loved the show, and all my friends were in it, and Howard Leese was in it when I saw
her. Yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah, I bought Howard in, I bought Paul in, wow. Bought Tracy Guns,
yeah.
Doug Aldridge.
Yeah.
It was cool. I also got Lou to do a couple of shows with us.
I didn't know that you were. I remember seeing you play bass, and then they had this guy from Bon Jovi playing bass too.
Yes, yes.
Is that what is
it? It all went a bit funny and got into some legal shit that, as usual with something, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a great time, and I was happy to be involved in the creation of it.
You know? Well, it's cool about the whole reinvention, about doing that. You know, you created something out of nothing. You're a part of something that really grew. I mean, I saw it several times. A great, great performance, a great concept. How about Rockstar Supernova? I mean, let's talk about it. I didn't expect that response from you, Gilby, but I mean, you know, you got Tommy Lee, which is another guy I can't imagine too far from Axel up here, kind of.
I know, I seem to hang out with those guys.
Know, man. Maybe it's you, bro. Yeah. Maybe it's you.
Well, the Supernova thing was interesting because what happened was the first season they did it, which was just called Rockstar, was for INXS. Mm-hmm. Well, when they first started it, they put a call out. They were thinking of having like an all-star backing band for the singers. It was very important to them that they represented like rock and roll rather than the pop kind of music. So they wanted a live band. And so they put out a call, and I auditioned for the backing band. And my band I auditioned with was Steve Gorman and Johnny Colt from the Black Crowes. I would play guitar. Ryan Roxy from Alice Cooper's band played guitar, and Dizzy from Guns N' Roses played keyboards. And when we auditioned, the producer Mark Burnett kept asking us to play more songs. Play more songs, and you know we did it for a couple hours. Went by, and then they called us like the next day. Said we decided we're going to go in a different direction for the backing band, but I have something I want to talk to you about. And so he said, I think next year we're going to try something where we want to start a band, like start a band from fresh, get a couple guys together with some names, and then we'll audition the singers to be in it. So when the next year came along, they called and they said, hey, put some names together for your, you know, your band. And I did. And Tommy Lee and Jason Newsted weren't on my list. And so what happened was Mark Burnett ran into Tommy Lee in Malibu somewhere. And he told Tommy about it, and Tommy goes, oh, my God, I want to be in it. And if you guys know Tommy, you know, he's very excitable.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like a little kid.
Exactly. He's very excitable. So Tommy came aboard, and when Tommy came aboard, the whole thing changed.
Yeah.
And Tommy's going, wow, let's call Jason. He's not playing with anybody. So it then became myself, Tommy, and Jason. And Dave Navarro was actually the one who was the host of the show. He wasn't in the band. He was the host. He's kind of the one who talked me into it because, to be honest, being in the backing band didn't sound so bad to me, but being like a part of the show, I was a little, had some reservations. You know, I never thought that rock and roll was really represented right on television. You know, they always kind of, you know, candied it up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we had a conversation, and Mark Burnett and Dave Navarro, the ones who talked me into it, and they said, look, we will never ever tell you what to say, what to wear, be yourself. We want you to be yourself. And so that's kind of what happened. It's like we really, you know, we got to be ourselves. We started a band, did it. It was a tour, a record involved. And I actually had a great time doing the band and doing the TV show. But, you know, we had to do the band business, you know, mm-hmm. touring and all that. It started getting
and
a little
kills
silly,
it. It's like everything else,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Just when the lawyers got involved, it started getting
funny. Oh, yeah. You know, uh-huh. I was with Ozzy. I was with Ozzy when we took them, Motley Crue, on their very first tour.
Oh, my God.
You know, and I saw it, like John Bonham stuff being done, like the spin and grab the cymbals with Tommy. And I said, wow, dude, that's pretty cool. Where'd you get it? He goes, from John Bonham. I said, well, indirectly, you got it from me because I used to do that with, Vanilla Fudge, you know.
Yeah.
And he didn't believe me. So after the tour, he came over to my house. I had this big house in Sherman Oaks. Mm-hmm. Had like a 4,000 square foot house with all these saunas and everything. So he came over the house and I showed him videos from the Ed Sullivan Show.
Wow.
1968. I said, there it is. He says, wow, dude, I can't. He says, you know, dude, every other thing.
Dude,
I can't believe it that you did that before Bonzo, dude. Oh, my God. And then first he walks into my house and says, man, I got to get a crib like this one day, you know, right? And then he ended up, you know, where he ended up. But then I showed him the end of the song, Shotgun, which was very similar to the end of Rock and Roll, which was done 4 years before. And when he saw that, he went, dude, I can't believe it. So then and we became buddies. I would go to his house when he was married to Heather. And we'd watch Gene Krupa videos, videos on his big screen TV, and we'd be talking about stick spinning and all that. We'd go up in his drum room and screw around.
But
and
can
was
you
like
imagine?
A little kid. He was always like a little kid. You
can
know?
You imagine the video that was on there before the Gene Krupa one?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I did.
Hey,
we do.
Just for the record, my house is 4,005 square feet.
Yeah,
these brothers are always one upping each other, man. Every week.
That was the old house.
It's that five square feet makes the difference.
That's what we say. It's always that 1 inch that counts, right?
My driveway's 4,000 square
she said.
Feet.
Hey, John, you take me down the timing and your involvement. You were friends with Jeff Lynne. You were supposed to be part of ELO. You were part of ELO 2. How did that whole thing?
I always loved ELO, and going to drummers, it was actually Bev Bevan who contacted me, and a guy called Peter Haycock, who was in the band Climax Blues Band. And Jeff had decided that he didn't want anything more to do with ELO and do his solo stuff. And it's all, the guy's a genius. He's a songwriter, singer, producer. I mean, he's the extra Beatle, basically. Bev asked me to join. And I said, oh, this would be really cool. And this was just before Asia. And I went to 44 Parkside Wimbledon, which is where the offices for Jet Records were, and met with Sharon's dad.
Don.
Yes.
Don.
Mr. Don Arden.
Don Arden.
The infamous Don Arden.
I know Don.
Yes.
I just come from being managed by Bill Kerbishley from The Who to meeting with Don Arden. And then actually, thirdly after that, was Simon Napier-Bell, who was actually the guy with Raiding the Rockfall, who came up with the original idea of having a show with well-known people on. But Don, I'd heard all these stories about him hanging Robert Stigwood out inside the window.
Oh, legendary.
And kidnapping their accountant and beating him with a paperweight. But he was a tough cookie.
Yeah.
And it got into a lot of negotiations. I went over to the States at the time to work with Jim Steinman on pre-production at the power station. And it never came to fruition for me. Jeff Lynne didn't want it to be called ELO. They wanted it to be called ELO Part 2. And then during that time, I got asked by Jeff Downes to join Asia. And I went, yeah, I'm leaving this disaster. And I remember Don Arden calling me up and threatening me. Nobody leaves me, son. Watch your back.
Wow.
Right? So they used to do it with, in the original days, with bands, with Black Sabbath in the original days. He said he'd smash up a venue if the band didn't play there. And if the band wasn't playing there, someone would come round and smash all the windows and everything.
My goodness.
He managed one of the Birmingham Mafia. Yeah, he managed one of my bands I was in called World War III, but it was brief.
I remember that.
And that's probably what it wound up being.
Yes.
Gilby, tell me, first of all, would you ever do anything with Steven? I mean, he's coming by us too. Would you do a walk-on with Adler? Would you do...
Steven, I love Steven. Steven, one of the first shows that Steven did when he kind of was getting back into things, he went to South America with me. Most rock bands do well in South America, mm-hmm. and my first solo record I did in 94, we actually had 3 top 10 singles in Argentina.
Wow.
And when I went down there, I did shows with Aerosmith. And one time when I went down, we wanted to do like a special guest thing, and they asked me if I'd consider playing with Steven. And I said, yeah. I go, Steven's a sweetheart. And we did it, and he was fantastic. Oh, yeah. You know, I mean... You know, as you drummers know, you know, you're either born with that groove, you know, and he's got that groove. And
you know,
and I'm a huge Matt Sorum fan, and I love the way Steven plays with that swing.
Here comes the story.
We told this story before, but Steven went to one of my drum offs, you know, the drum offs. I started it with, and Guitar Center sort of took it from me, but I don't know what year it was, the second or third one. We were doing the drum off outside in Sherman Oaks when they had the store in Sherman Oaks.
The big one, yeah.
Yeah, so we did it in the parking lot. And Steven came down with Slash and Steven's mother. And I called him Steven Older. Right? Because they spelled it wrong.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? And he didn't win. And he actually was freaking out, you know.
Yeah.
And his mother came up and started yelling at us for not picking him. And Slash was with him. Slash
how
told me
funny,
that story.
How funny.
You know?
Well, when we first came up play-by-place, when I first met him, I thought he was kidding. He's like, hey, man, I really love your place, man. I'm having a great time. I thought he was kidding. His voice. And after all he's been through, we're like, man.
He's overcome some big challenges.
Oh, man.
Especially recently. It's again, but he's an amazing musician, despite.
But, you know, the way I look at things, guys like Steven and Tommy, they're very genuine.
Yep. Yep.
Yes. They're very genuine. They're
like
very
loving,
real people.
Loving.
You know, exactly. And I got no problems with any of that. I mean, you know, he really cares about music. Yeah. He's proud of that record.
He's a good guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we have a question from our buddy Francois in France. Wants to know from either or both of our guys, is there anybody that you guys are following now or you think was on the cutting edge or a really cool band that's out now?
All of us? All of us?
No.
Everybody except Vinny.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good, because
especially our guests, because I know you're managing one now, Carm.
I mean, I think there's some great bands out there right now, young guys. I think the band Rival Sons are incredible.
Rival Sons,
you know, they have a great sound. You know, and their music, every record, they're getting better and
they're
better.
Classic, you know, and they're classic sounding, you know.
Exactly. Like I said, it's just rock and roll, you know, which is what we need.
We're
going to have.
We're going to have Dirty Honey on the show in a couple of weeks.
They're another great young band.
Greta Van Fleet's another one.
Yeah, I'm managing this band called Kodiak, which is a young Van Halen kind of band.
Wow. Right.
You know, and Greta Van Fleet gets so much stick about, you know, how similar they are to Zeppelin. It's like, well, it's a lot better than if they were being a bloody DJ, you know. So we all work from our influences.
Well, you know what? I mean, it's like saying someone, that opera singer, he sounds like Pavarotti. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, that doesn't suck. It's not a bad thing.
Right.
Taylor Swift and Justin Bieber, I think.
Very close.
Really close. Yeah.
I think in the Greta Van Fleet case, it's just because there's such a small sample size of young rock bands, you know, that they're going a little harsh. It's like, you know, when I was young and I was buying records of whether it was Zeppelin, Alice Cooper, Kiss, or Aerosmith, I bought everything.
Yeah.
Every Foghat, Ted Nugent, I bought everything, you know. It's like I didn't judge them too harshly. It's like I was just so excited to get music. I think you got to be happy with the new young band making music, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, agreed.
Gilby, tell us really briefly before we have to close our show, but tell us about the Gospel Truth.
The Gospel Truth. So, guys, I have a new record coming out April 23rd, and this record has actually been done for 2 years. It's been done for a while. We kind of put it back. We were just about to release it right when the pandemic hit, so we put it off, hoping to play live, and it got to a point of we just got to get it out. But I got some great drummers on it. Kenny Aronoff is on it. Stephen Perkins from Jane's Addiction is on it. Matt Starr's on it. The great thing about being a solo act is I don't have to be stuck with
you. I don't know, Vinny, he didn't call me. Did he call you, Vinny?
Yeah, he did. I told him.
I told him I can't afford him. That's what's great to me about being a solo artist is I can have a combination of different guys, drummers.
He
bass,
sent me a bunch of bunch of charts that were written in pencil.
The full circle.
I couldn't even see. So I need my glasses.
What is it gospel? Is it gospel?
No. It's just the gospel truth is just a name. It's, you know, it's my truth now. It's all rock and roll. It's loud guitars.
Cool. Yeah,
well,
cool.
We need everybody because our show is taking off, and that's the gospel truth because people are loving it. It's our 44th episode next week. We've got Kofi Baker and Dweezil Zappa. We need everybody to share, like, check our Spotify channel, check our podcast
on iHeartRadio.
We're all over the place. Our YouTube channel, subscribe to. We need you guys to help us out there because I'll tell you what, we are becoming these two guys are becoming an international.
Hey, Ron.
Yes.
We can't make it next week.
Gilby, John, what are you guys doing with a co-host?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I'm
it's a take
you gotta get two Gilby, other Italian guys. You got one.
Gilby, I'm giving you more time they gave you for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, so at least you got a week to prepare. Anyway, thank you guys. Gilby Clark, John Payne. Love you guys.
Thank
John
you guys.
Payne.
Thanks
at
for doing
Ricotta,
it, man.
August 28th.
Thank you.
Be safe. It looks like we're going to be opening up really, really soon. God bless you all. And here, you know, salute to live music coming back, right?
Right on.
Have a great week.
Yes, right on.
We'll see you next week on Hanging and Banging. Thanks, guys.
Go, guys. Thank you.
Good night.